This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of streaming media. This is episode number 79, recorded October the 3rd, 2024. I am, of course, your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell. And with me is Joseph Adalian, West Coast editor of New York Magazine's Vulture. Joe, welcome back to Downstream.
Jason, it's a pleasure to be here as the last show in the 70s. I love the 70s, so I'm glad to be on show 79, unless you do a 79 and a half. I don't know.
You know, I have some fondness for the 70s, but my memory of it is that everything was sort of warm-toned and smelly. That's the other thing
so
I remember
smelly.
Is the 70s was a very stinky decade. Like,
especially just Los Angeles. I remember going to Los Angeles as a kid sometimes, and just like you could just, the diesel, you could smell just, the lead and the gas.
Yeah, there's
the
so
smog,
many,
the cigarettes.
So many, yeah, I mean, like, so many smells in the 70s.
You could get lung cancer in 30 minutes or less. It was like dominoes. It
bring
just delivered.
On the 80s, I say. But 70s are here still. So much to talk about in this episode. I want to start with the return of a familiar face, Brian Williams, who was the NBC Nightly News anchor and then embellished something about a helicopter that nobody would even care about today, probably. But back then, we were much more moralistic about it. Anyway, he was fired from that. He did a comeback. He did some MSNBC hosting, and then he went away again. He's coming back again in a very interesting way, which is he is going to host, Brian Williams, a live election special on election night on Prime Video, which opens the discussion of streaming and news. And I just wanted to throw out this thing, this thought I had a couple weeks ago that I posted on social media somewhere, I don't even remember where, which was the problem with sports versus news is like somebody like ESPN and other streamers, like you can sign a contract, pay some money, get like sports rights, and you've got some guaranteed live events people are going to want to watch. You can build out your whole business on it. The problem with news is that while the dynamic of news is a little like sports in that it's really about the live stuff that's happening now, you can't just sign a contract with hurricanes or natural disasters of other kinds or wars to the, that's a plot of a Max Headroom episode. That show was amazing. To do your TV rights. There was literally an episode of Max Headroom where they signed TV rights with a terrorist group so that they had the rights to their explosions. It's amazing. Just, I mean, so far ahead of its time. Anyway, my point is, you know, the one predictable news event that happens, elections. So
right.
Here we are, great exception to the rule. Why not build a streaming program around elections and then see how it does and see where you go from here? What do you think about the idea of Amazon getting into the live news game for one night only for now?
I hope they're not spending a lot of money for Brian Williams' contract on this. I like Bry Wy.
I mean, it's one night.
It's one night, but you know, he, you know, well, in one of the articles about this, he supposedly compared, or him or his producer supposedly compared this to sort of, you know, Sinatra coming out of retirement for
yeah.
a night, which, okay.
Yeah, sure.
And by the way, I am someone who unapologetically likes Brian Williams. I thought he was not railroaded. I thought the brouhaha was nothing. There was no reason that he had to leave NBC
yeah.
Nightly News. I was glad that he went back to MSNBC. He continued hosting on MSNBC for years yeah. without incident. Everything was fine. It's a complete double standard.
Yeah, perfectly
it's a false equivalency that the
capable
media
anchor. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, with
I agree.
The false equivalency of, mm-hmm. you know, that even the media imposes on its own people that Fox News doesn't care about. But anyway, so I'm certainly someone who might possibly open up for a minute or two. The thing is, the problem with this particular thing, and we can broaden out and talk about the bigger thing about news on streaming, is that people who are going to watch this or be interested in watching Brian Williams, they're already going to have their favorites, and they're going to want
sure.
the full service on this incredibly stressful evening where people who care, you know, people will be on social media getting instant results. They will be watching, if they're partisans, Fox News or MSNBC, where the A teams are for the reporters and the correspondents. This is not something where it's just, and Brian Williams, despite the fact that he fashions himself something of a comedian, is not, you know, Jon Stewart or anyone right. else. I don't know that, and with especially this election with tensions so high and people so stressed, it's not a relaxing, normal election. So you can't have the relaxing, normal, especially if Brian goes straight down the middle on Amazon, which they probably will want.
Yes.
Even more boring. I think CNN will be there for those people who want it. Will there be some CNN viewers who potentially will check this out? Yes. I think if you're regularly watching CNN now, you're the type of viewer who maybe would want sort of something like Brian Williams, where it's leans a little bit to the left, but still is pretty straight down the middle.
Well, it's your typical, media bias. My dad was a Republican, and he was always like, "Oh, that Dan Rather, he's out to get me." But it's kind of elite, but corporatist, but also a little bit left leaning. But also, they want to tell themselves that it's down the middle. I my counter would be that there are certain people who will have Prime Video who won't have access to CNN, who maybe are cord cutters and don't have access to anything. And this might, and also it's international, right? And people in other places right. who want the Americans to tell them about the election. So there's, I could see there being some audience here, but I don't think it's going to be a blockbuster, right? Because if you've got MSNBC or Fox News, you're going to be watching that.
Well, right. And of course, CNN will be on Max streaming live with election news.
Yes.
So that'll be there for that theirs. Overlap. And sure, I think it makes sense from Amazon because whatever the spend is, it's a drop. It's teeny tiny for Amazon. And it allows them to do what companies like Amazon and all streamers love to do, which is collect data, is to sort of get the sense of what people come to this, how often they stay, how they engage in it. You know, if there are certain guests, potentially that could be interesting. But I did see in one of the articles about this, you know, they're talking to people like James Carville. Really? You're getting James Carville? Wow, that's a get. I mean, I saw him at a taco stand giving election commentary the other day. So, you know, I'm again, and I sound a lot more negative about this than I really am. I'm fine with this, I guess. Again, I think it's more helpful to him than to Amazon. But if Amazon can gain some insights, then it's a good sort of marketing thing or good market research sort of thing. The broader question, though, is can news work in streaming? And I think it absolutely can. And I think it's been I don't know that Netflix needs to get into the business, just why I still don't think Netflix really needs to get into sports. Besides sort of the shoulder programming, like stuff that's with big stars like the roast of Tom Brady or some other stuff. I guess they're going to have an NFL game and okay, fine. I think it's a giant waste of money myself. But for other streamers, I think news is something, especially is something that can be done if it's built in conjunction with a linear platform. I think it makes sense for CNN and Max because it's synergies there. I feel like it's ridiculous that there isn't a way to sort of make some form of MSNBC a bigger part of the Peacock offering.
Right.
They're obviously worried about the cable of it all, but you know, now that you're seeing companies like Spectrum, and I think we're going to get into this later, talk about having, if you get Spectrum, you get Peacock. Well, that opens up the door. Then let people watch MSNBC live or immediately after on a platform like Peacock. And I also feel the other thing that's missing is leaning into sort of the headline news of it all. There continues to be an audience that I think would love to have the ability to tune into a streaming platform or a cable network or anyone and just get the world presented to them straight ahead within 20, 25 minutes of just straight ahead news. No talking commentary. And where you can constantly, where you don't have the overhead of a CNN and you don't have to worry about ratings as much, but you just know that it's part of the offering of a platform. And if you, especially as we get the rebundling, which we've talked about before, as that goes on, then you want to find a way to give people access to news. It doesn't have to be, the same as CNN, but give them people want to get everything from television that they can get in linear. They want to get it on streaming, whether it's reruns of Blue Sky shows from USA Network like Suits, whether it's movies, whether it's, streaming rights to sports. They want the same kinds of programming. So there's an audience for news. It's just a matter of, where you get that and do you have to pay for the startup? It doesn't make sense for Amazon or Netflix to start a news division at all or to start a newscast, but it does make sense to me to find a way to piggyback on some existing franchises or existing platforms and find a way to share the costs and sort of be agnostic and meet the audience where they are.
Yeah, I think you made some great points there. Something that, and Julia and I talked about this back in the day too, the idea that like I said, sports is understandable. You could, you know, ESPN knows how many games it's going to have on any given day for the next several years, right? Like they, and you can stand up a whole infrastructure around that, and it makes sense. And news, it's much harder to do that because you end up in this thing where, and this is what they've all found, is you can stand up a whole news organization, linear news organization. But the problem with that is that that'll be great when there's a huge story that everybody wants to tune in to see. There is still some visceral thing. As somebody who doesn't watch TV news almost at all, and which is me, there are certain news events where I want to turn on the TV, right? Like there's absolutely that still exists. But in order to have the wherewithal to do that, you kind of have to have the infrastructure there, which is very expensive, and that's your linear infrastructure. So how you balance that out, and I think you made the point, which is you kind of need to have that. Whatever you're going to stand up somewhere to make available to people in a moment where there's a big deal, you kind of need to have something in the background. So like this is the thing with Max of like, well, you know, Max has CNN, but like what you really want is to be able to have a breaking news thing in Max that says, oh, this thing's going on right now and we can take you there live right now. And people might not watch CNN ongoing, but they're going to watch the breaking news. They get a push notification on their device. They go there and they watch it. And so if you're NBC, you've got NBC News and MSNBC. You could do that for Peacock. Everybody should have a piece like that if they've got some usable, workable infrastructure to have the ability to generate streaming. Now, if I'm Amazon, I don't have that. So I can do an election show, and that's fine. But in the long run, if I want to do more news content like this, I probably want to find a partner who has an infrastructure and use them. And it doesn't even need to be a TV partner necessarily, but it needs to be a news infrastructure partner that you can use.
Well, they have the Washington Post, but it's technically not the same company, but it's related.
In the family.
It's cousins. You know, Amazon actually already does do this to a degree. They have integrated into on their Fire TV and even on Prime. You can get ABC News Live, I believe, or NBC News. They have their fast channels now that there's, you know, that's on Freevee, but it's also on Prime. So it's there, and people know that it's there. And are people watching? I don't know. I mean, to me, the key though is actually finding the bigger challenge is less about the breaking news and whatever, which has always been a challenge. It's been a challenge for CNN for 30 years, and they've gone up and down with streaming. The thing is the reason it makes sense to spread it across multiple platforms is then rating, it doesn't become as important if you're not getting people tuning in all the time. But you do want to create tent poles that people might subscribe to a service. For example, if Rachel Maddow, who only now is doing one night a week on MSNBC, but if she did Tuesdays exclusively on Peacock, that would probably drive subscriptions, right? It might be difficult because, you know, whatever, but it's content there that could work. Or with some of their other anchors, there are ways to do that that no one is really trying to do. And you know, it's been the last 4 years have not been, you know, the Biden years unfortunately have been bad for cable news because it's been a lot more calm until recently. But I think, you know, if things get more excitable, that you might be seeing more people just tuning in to see what's going on in the world. But I think there's a way to find new stars that you can sort of lean into. People, you know, want content. And that's where this Brian Williams is. I think they're selling Brian Williams at an event, and that's fine. But does Amazon need to start a news division? No, they don't.
Certainly not. But you could create a partnership, with Washington Post. Or I was thinking, you know, there are other brands out there. Like, I have this thought every now and then, which is like, does the New York Times not want to do a live TV stream on election night? Like, you could totally do that, and you could even limit it to your subscribers if you wanted to. I mean, like,
they probably do, actually. They do. The Washington Post does have its own fast channel and does do some streaming content. It's there. I think people, it's a limited resource. Right. Some of that, I agree. I think, you know, the bigger problem here, Jason, is the fact, we've talked about this before again, is that networks don't want to, in addition to cable fees and that sort of infrastructure, there's also the network affiliates, right? So there's a reason why NBC Nightly News, you know, can't go on Peacock until hours after it airs, although sometimes it's on YouTube sooner, right? Seth Meyers, for example, can put big chunks of his show on YouTube even before it airs on the West Coast or East Coast, but you can't put it on Peacock. Why? Because everyone's worried about pissing off the affiliates. And
right.
As long as you have that sort of tension with affiliates and people sort of being afraid to give up the interim money, they're losing out on the bigger picture, which is finding a way to sort of be to make it seamless so that the same stuff that people like and watch, 6 million, 5 million, 7 million people watch the Network Nightly News or the Today Show, have that audience, have those same shows simulcast on streaming platforms. Make it sort of, you know, seamless so that audiences get it where they are. And that way, it doesn't matter because you're not sort of, the streamer isn't bearing the cost of it, whether that's going it through a text one like Amazon or Netflix or the affiliated streamers. It eventually, I think it's going to happen where, you know, the affiliate fees will become so small or so unimportant that they're just going to find a way to just make ABC News content that's on both.
Yeah, I think that's inevitable. I wanted to also mention this quote from Brian Williams's producer, Jonathan Wald, who said about the problem of how you structure news in an era of streaming. What if you paid the Anderson Coopers and Jake Tappers less money to work less, freeing them up to pursue extracurricular projects while keeping them on hand for the big news nights like an election that really matter to the brand and the business? And what I thought was interesting about this statement is it does suggest, I'm not sure about extracurricular, but the idea that maybe your brand name news people, you want them on hand for the big events, and they either you pay them or they do something else that is creating other content that might actually be more appealing. This is a little bit the Rachel Maddow approach, although they paid her more to work less instead of less to work less. But it's that idea that she's only there one night a week, but she's also got she's there for special events. And then she was there for the debate, the vice presidential debate. But also she's got other projects. She's got a book over here and a podcast over here and all these other things. And I suspect that news stars of the future, their jobs will look more like, actually kind of more like my job, where I've got like 8 different jobs and I'm doing a podcast over here and a different one over there. And then I'm writing over here. And I think that there's something to that. The idea that I don't need to pay my star, you know, my anchor, whether it's Anderson Cooper or somebody else, to sit at the desk every night at the same time. I think that maybe those days are over, especially considering how expensive they are. But you do want those people attached for when there's a big story. And maybe like Rachel Maddow one night a week. I don't know.
Yeah, see, I see what you're saying. I think that's just sort of sugarcoating the reality, which is that places that have news stars that don't have strong followings and identities are simply going to either pay those
people they can't pay
less
them
to keep
all.
Doing
yeah.
what the West, or they'll just give it to sort of generic people, right? You know, CNN's
totally.
Primetime lineup is now made up of people. You've got Anderson Cooper and 2 other people no one really knows. And Anderson Cooper does maybe 100,000 viewers more, and he's there for the big events
right.
and it's sort of he's a brand ambassador for CNN, but the value in terms of nightly, not so much.
Right.
Whereas at MSNBC, you know, they had to make a deal with Maddow because that's what she wanted. So they figured it out. And if some of their other anchors do it, they might do that, or they might just say, well, we'll spend less and develop a new generation of talent
right.
because, you know, they still need to be able to get those numbers in there. I think what you are going to see is you're going to just see the complete downsizing of a lot of these stars. And I think that's going to be, to some degree, though, a mistake because, you know, the reason Fox News works so well is that it does have strong personalities as well as strong
Always.
Overall brand. It's a propaganda, not news, but it's still, and those, by the way, then they have backup ones, right? So when one of them gets accused of sexual harassment, or finally says something too much, like Bill O'Reilly or Tucker Carlson, they've got a Jesse Waters
Somebody
ready to
else.
Come in there
yeah,
and
no.
do perfectly just as great numbers relative to everything else. Still
yeah,
just
it's
killing it,
really
right?
Really an amazing machine that they've got.
It really is. And and MSNBC also, by the way, you know, no one does what Maddow does. She does like about 30 to 40% higher on Mondays than anyone else. And her 9 o'clock replacement is actually the lowest rated hour on the night she's on. But, you know, Lawrence O'Donnell does a solid audience. And I think, you know, if they have a generation, some other people who could move in there when she goes. But yeah, it's definitely the days of giant news superstars.
Yeah.
And even sports announcing superstars to some degree is sort of over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, less money to work less. I had that thought of like, well, we're not going to pay Anderson Cooper in the long run to sit on a desk 5 nights a week because it doesn't make sense. But maybe you pay him to to keep him around in some form. And then he's also got his 60 Minutes, whatever, and he's got some other things that he's doing. And that's very different from the, when it was like, no, 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 we must keep you and we're going to own all of your time and we're going to pay you a huge fortune. And like, it doesn't make sense anymore. It just...
Well, and you're saying that at the network news divisions where CBS is soon going to be anchored by nobody A and nobody B.
I mean, it's
true. I don't even know their names. And that's, but that's a sign of just sort of this, that's the sign of the underperformers will do that. I think the overperformers, I don't think, you know, maybe, you know, maybe Lester Holt is not a big enough star, but I think that they will, you know, and maybe they'll try to pay less. He's getting older, but, you know, I still think it matters for those successful networks. I think NBC is still going to want someone who's, if they're smart, they're going to want someone who's sort of a star. But obviously, right, they all have to be paid less because there's just less money in network TV.
Yeah, that's the bottom line here, is we're dealing with the dynamics of less. Well, I will flip over maybe to Brian Williams at some point just because I'm interested in seeing what they do with their LED wall and all of that and James Carville and all of that. But yeah, you're right. It's probably not. I like that they're experimenting. I guess that's what I'll say. I enjoy seeing, I look forward to seeing the results of the experiment, and maybe they'll find out that there's something there. I don't know.
I'm all in favor of experimentation too. I will definitely check it out for a minute or two, depending upon whether or not I have to hook myself up to oxygen, depending upon where the results are going.
Who knows? Who knows how that's going to go? I still have some memories of the bottle of wine that that we opened on election night in 2016. It's like, those aren't fun memories. Anyway,
literally banged my head against a wall in 2016. I'm not kidding.
I believe
it's self-soothing.
I read your Twitter feed. I know all about it.
Oh, have I talked about this? Oh, geez. Well, it's public.
No, yeah. I just mean, you can intuit it from your Twitter feed. Anyway,
he can tell that I'm crazy enough is what he's saying.
There's a lot of politics on Joe's Twitter feed. If you want to check out TV Mojo.
I apologize to all of you. And yet, sorry, not sorry. Yeah, it's my way of coping.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on. Here's another topic. This is actually a really nice story that you mentioned, and it's got a few different dimensions. You wrote a piece on Vulture about it. This is this trend now, which is when content providers are making deals with cable, they're rolling their streaming services into the deal, and it keeps happening. Charter's new deal with Warner Brothers Discovery includes the ad-supported tiers of Max and Discovery Plus. Peacock and Spectrum just made a deal that will include, or NBC Universal and Spectrum made a deal that will include Peacock, so that their subscribers, cable subscribers, will also get the ad level of Peacock, as well as Disney Plus, Paramount Plus, AMC Plus. There are interesting wrinkles here, because if you're somebody who's a cable subscriber and pays for Disney Plus and now you get it, you'll presumably cancel your direct relationship and keep the one that comes with your cable service. The net result there is that there's less money going to the streamer because they're getting the wholesale rate from the cable company, but they are getting, you know, it's fascinating, because what this should have happened 5 years ago, I suppose, but what we're getting at is, if you're a cable subscriber and you want streaming, you will get it probably in the long run. You will probably get access to a bunch of free, in quotes, streamers as a part of your cable bundle. The cable bundle now includes streaming services. That's just where we're going with this.
You're right. And, you know, look, it's about damn time, to quote the name of a song. Especially because, you know, let's face it, these big conglomerates like NBC Universal and Paramount and Disney have so degraded the quality of programming on their cable networks that, yeah, they better offer something, because audiences are the reason people are fleeing cable now is not so much because streaming is so great, it's because cable has become so bad at doing anything other than giving you crystal clear broadcast signals with sports rights and a few channels that still do quality distinct programming, like the cable news networks, like Hallmark Channel, oddly enough. Everything else is just reruns of stuff that you can watch with, you know, one third the number of ads on a streamer. So there's no reason to it. So essentially, this is sort of basically saying, you know, cable is barren for so much, but streaming has all the stuff we used to put on cable, so we'll just sort of treat it as sort of the same thing, and it makes sense. And as I wrote in my story about this, Jason, you know, early on during the days of Peacock at launch, the executives at Comcast and Peacock told me, our goal is to make, you know, Peacock free to anybody who has cable. We're going to do it with Comcast cable customers because it's part of our company, and they had struck a deal with Cox cable customers. But we're going to negotiate with all these other cable operators, and we want to make it so that if you have cable, you're going to get Peacock, because Peacock is going to lean heavily on all the content from NBC Universal Cable. We want to have the Bravo stuff there, our NBC Next Day stuff. So it's just going to make sense, and we think this is a way to get to 60-70 million subscribers, so we can sell advertising on it, and it'll be a better experience, and everyone will be happy.
Yeah.
And then the cable operators initially were like, we're not going to do this, and they weren't ready. They were just like, no, or NBC didn't want to offer the sort of discounts or whatever it is to sort of make it worth their while. Maybe they wanted to charge. I don't know for sure. They might have said to the cable operators, "Well, you have to pay like $4 as opposed to $5, so we're giving you a cheap discount." And the cable operators were like, "No, you'll give it to us for free, or give it to us for $1 extra, whatever." So it didn't happen, but now it is happening, and it mm-hmm. just makes sense. It's you know, these legacy companies have an advantage. They've got cable, and is it too little too late? That's the real question.
Although a lot of these legacy companies, cable companies, are also internet providers. And so I can also see a scenario where they start offering essentially an internet bundle, which includes not traditional linear TV, but a streaming bundle that you pay an extra on your internet bill that you're not paying for TV. And you get streaming services, right? Like there are other places for that bundle to go than the traditional bundle. And sure. Most cord cutters don't actually cut the cord. They still have an internet provider, cable or fiber or whatever it is. So I do think there's some room there for that. I say this as I have AT&T fiber, and I have, it's bundled with Max. Like, because they used to own it, even though they don't, it's still in the bundle, and it's really nice. I don't have to pay for Max. Well, it's part of my internet plan.
Well, it depends upon, of course, if you want all those things, all those channels. It at some point it's going to be like, well, what's the cost savings, right? Because right now they're still offering you pay $100 for a video package, or $80 for a video package, and you get this quote unquote $65 free. So it's not really free, but you're now effectively only paying, you know, $30 for your video. Which, okay, whatever. It becomes cheap. What it does is it is really a direct assault at YouTube TV and some of those platform direct, you know, to consumer streaming virtual cable networks, right? And I'll be very curious to see if they sort of offer the same deals.
The advantage of the bundle too is that it's a bundle of multiple services for a discount, right? But the mm-hmm. discount is over subscribing to them all. So if you subscribe to them all, it's a pretty good deal. But if you only subscribe to some of them, it ends up being like it's an okay deal. But what you're also from the other side, you're reducing churn, because even if Paramount Plus isn't pleasing you right now, it doesn't really matter, because they're in the bundle, and there's some bundle psychology going there. Yeah, exactly. So I feel like, you know, what is the famous line? The only two ways to make money are to bundle and unbundle. I mean, that's basically where we are.
Well, right. And this is also going at a time, too, where you're going to see, especially streamers that are not Netflix or Amazon, dramatically cut back on original content. And so there are going to be people sort of weighing, like, why am I still paying for this when I'm getting a lot less than I used to? Or they're getting, you know, less original entertainment content. It's going to be more network stuff. You know, already on Disney, you're getting fewer big Star Wars and Marvel original series than you did 2 years ago. You're not getting, you know, movies 3 weeks later. You're getting them 90 days later or 120 days later. So, you know, it's really interesting times to see how this all evolves. And I also hope that what also happens is someone solves the problem of creating a better user experience where you don't have to open 15 different apps, or you can do what Apple tries to do but doesn't quite do of successfully keeping track of all your content, and sort of becomes where we're flipping through these apps becomes as easy as flipping through a cable dial.
Amazing.
That would be a good thing. And there should be some way to do it. We're not there yet. It's always going to be difficult because Netflix has shown absolutely zero indication.
Right.
And Amazon's probably the same way of sort of allowing themselves to bundle. But, you know, Amazon does do that to some degree. Amazon has actually done even better than Apple at really sort of leaning into making Prime sort of this one-stop shopping for a bunch of different services. You can subscribe to channels through Prime and really get all of your content in the Prime ecosphere. It's I don't do it because I don't like the Prime user experience. It mm-hmm. sucks. And also you have to pay more. But if they can figure out a way to make pricing where, you know, hey, for $50 a month, you get all this, you know.
Yeah,
we'll see.
We will see. This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Tracked, your perfect companion for tracking what you watch. Between all the streaming services you have, do you ever feel overwhelmed, not knowing what to watch next? Well, Say hello to Tract, the super smart app that's got your back. Tract apps are packed with awesome features that make tracking your favorite shows and movies a breeze. Track what you like in real time, whether you're chilling at home or killing time at the airport. It's like a matchmaker for shows, suggesting new stuff you'll love based on what you've already enjoyed. And you can discover where to stream your must-watch content no matter where you are in the world. Keep your must-watch list handy and organized, perfect for those what-should-we-watch moments. And if you've ever wondered about your binge-watching habits, Tract has a fun year-in-review feature that lets you dive into your viewing stats. I've definitely been using Tract to keep track of. I mean, it's so easy to get lost and forget about that show that you're halfway through. I had this experience earlier today where I was like, did we finish that show or not? And the answer is, look at Tract, because Tract will tell you. And as new episodes come out, it also reminds you and says, hey, guess what? That new show, a new episode of that show, new season of that show you liked is back. It's really great. The best part, Tract works with all your devices, web, Android, iOS, and even Apple TV, which I use. It's like having a TV-savvy friend right in your pocket, always ready to make your watching experience more fun and hassle-free. So go to Tract.tv, that's Trakt.tv/downstream for a 50% discount on Tract VIP. It's Trakt.tv/downstream, Trakt.tv/downstream for a 50% discount on VIP. Trakt.tv/downstream, 50% off for the first year. Thank you to Tract for their support of this show and all of Relay. All right, I want to talk to you about something that's, I think, near and dear. Again, referring to your Twitter feed, I know this about you, and you may know this about me too, but I'm also a fan of game shows and, of course, classic game shows. And amazing, weird news that you wrote about at Vulture. Amazon has been ordering game shows. Now, that makes sense. They're cheap, and you can make a lot of them. That's great. But they are going to program game shows so that at some point here over the next few weeks, they are going to premiere a bunch of different game shows. And we're going to end up with the concept of Winning Wednesdays, which is like, why did it take them so long? You and I talked, I don't know if that was on air or not, about the idea about a few months ago about why is there not a sitcom drop on a day so that you can watch all four new episodes of that sitcom every must-see TV. Exactly. Yep. Well, guess what? Winning Wednesdays on Prime Video, where they're going to have Are You Smarter Than a Celebrity, Pop Culture Jeopardy, Buy It Now, and Wish List Games. Four different game shows that they're premiering, and some of them are going to have multi-episode drops. And basically what it is on Wednesdays, Winning Wednesdays, you will have kind of a network lineup of game shows that you can watch every week, where you can make an appointment and there are multiple shows. And like, again, I understand that you can't do this with everything and game shows are cheap and you can make a lot of them, but I love that they're trying this. It sounds from your article like they kind of stumbled into it, but then thought, we've got the game shows, why not? And speaking of what we said earlier about, I like that they're trying this stuff. I love that Amazon is trying this of like, what if we programmed a day? Imagine a day of programming. So Winning Wednesdays is it. I'm excited about this. I think this is hilarious. What do you think?
I mean, first of all, it proves that voodoo works, because I had an elaborate ceremony to actually make this happen. I had executives.
Chanted Gene Ray Byrne. Yes.
And voodoo dolls of Amazon executives. It was great. During the interview with the executive, Lauren over at Amazon, I literally was shaking my fist, pumping it in the air when she was outlining the strategy, because I was like, she gets it. Look, this isn't everything I want, because the content, they are leaning back. They didn't create this from the word go. If they had done that, they would come up with, honestly, more compatible shows. Honestly, I've seen some of them, probably better shows. And all of them would sort of, one of the shows on the list, Wishlist Games, is just going to be a one-week-only drop around Black Friday designed to drive people onto Amazon and or just make them feel good and spend stuff. And so it's going to be 1 week only, but you can watch the episodes whenever you want. And they know also that people aren't going to watch, even all the episodes at once. But yes, it is sort of basically, especially once Jeopardy premieres in early December, you're going to have Jeopardy and Are You Smarter Than a Celebrity and Buy It Now, which is a hybrid reality game show that really isn't a game show, but it's game show-ish. It's really home shopping, honestly, but with some game show elements. But they're trying, so I give them a lot of credit. And yes, they realize, like, we want to lean into the behaviors that people have shown they enjoy for decades. And, you know, that's time slots. That's putting on one channel and forgetting it. It's playlists. It's a no-brainer to try. I hope that this will be the beginning of other experiments. There's no reason you couldn't do it with other shows that sort of air in the same pattern. You know, I was talking to someone earlier today at I can say this at CBS about their new show Matlock, and you know they're doing a lot of interesting marketing around it. But right now CBS has, you know, a really fun Thursday night lineup coming together with Matlock and Elsbeth, a double weekly dose of mystery dramas, and then also a couple comedies. But you know, and they promote it. It's a nice Thursday lineup. I'm not going to watch it live on there because I'm not putting up with all those commercials or staying up. But there should be a playlist on CBS One Button where if a viewer wants to, I can see all four of those shows that are on CBS Thursday and watch them together. Or on Peacock, there should be one button every week where it's like, you know, NBC Wednesday, and you press one button and auto plays into the three episodes of the Chicago shows.
Amen.
It's effectively there in that they're all there, and you can go back and then go out of the app and then go back again or whatever. But it's not that convenient because the tech either hasn't caught up or they've just been too lazy. But these types of things are really good, you know, and we see the popularity of platforms like Pluto or live TV channels on Tubi that sort of have that lean back sort of cable-like experience. People want that sort of lean back, don't think about it experience. They want to make appointments for things. And this is just a step in that direction. And hopefully they follow up on it.
Yeah, it's a good thing. An ongoing conversation that Julia and I always had was about how disappointing a lot of the streaming apps are, where they're very much like, here's a list, pick one, play it. And how there's such an opportunity for curation and playlists and directed autoplay and things like, that's actually what fast channels do really well, is you go to the channel and then it just kind of happens and it washes over you. And there's something like that. And I love the idea of taking a lineup and saying, especially on these network connected streaming services where there literally was a lineup, and saying, you know, just watch, let me watch my whatever it is, my Chicago Dick Wolf shows if I need to. So I love it, though. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the night of game shows, and you know, I hope it does well for Amazon enough for them to say maybe there's something here about like themed programming dropping at specific times and letting people watch sort of like the collection of things on and make an appointment. I mean, appointment television, it really is a thing. Like, people watch TV every night. I remember very fondly the, you know, oh, thank goodness it's Thursday, and all of those shows that we watch on Thursday nights.
Friday.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was like, you know, ER, well, TGIF.
Thank goodness it's Thursday.
Yes, thank goodness it's Thursday, not TGIF. I didn't watch TGIF, but I did watch, you know, Seinfeld and Friends and ER and all of that sort of thing. Or for me, it was like, yeah, Friday night, The X-Files is on, right? Like there is something, some power to that I think that they could exploit.
And this is why I hope that Netflix or that Amazon looks at this data and realizes that it does make a difference whether something is organic or not. You know, if this lineup actually had been designed with how people watch television, you would probably not put Pop Culture Jeopardy and maybe you would Pop Culture Jeopardy, but I don't know that the overlap between Are You Smarter Than a Celebrity and Pop Culture Jeopardy is going to be exactly the same. It might. I mean, Wheel of Fortune could not be any different than Jeopardy. So it could be, but certainly win it now. I don't know, but there's some of it. But if you actually designed it from scratch and you intentional were about the kinds of game shows you made or comedies, then yes, I think it would be even better, because then you would know that thematically there was more similarity than just the broadness of game shows. This is a start, though.
Yeah, it's a good start. More panel shows where celebrities get to be drunk and silly, please.
Bring back Match Game again. ABC tried, but Alec Baldwin was the worst possible choice for a host, but it's time to bring it back again.
There's no Gene Rayburn, for sure. Mm-hmm. All right, a few other items to cover here. wanted to really mention this funny thing that got reported in advance and then turned out to be a big nothing, which is that Netflix invited a whole bunch of agents and managers and publicists over. Like, come on, we're going to talk. We're going to break it down. And Bella Bajaria got up and talked about it. And they all figured this was going to be the moment where they started saying, okay, we can't pay you upfront everything. We're going to start tying your compensation to performance on Netflix. Like, hits are going to get compensated more, and shows that don't get watched are going to get compensated less. And yet that didn't seem to happen. There was a quote that I found that I thought was hilarious, where apparently outspoken Endeavor CEO Ari Emanuel actually said to Bella Bajaria in front of everybody, when are you going to talk about back end and how you're going to F us? Which, and he didn't say F, listener. And they, you know,
he said bleep. He said bleep us.
They didn't. They didn't. Apparently, they're doing it on movie projects. But they this sounds to me like they got cold feet and they were going to talk about it, and then they got afraid. So they're like, oh no, just we're going to talk about how great things are. And anyway, it's happening in the background, and they're trying it out, and everybody in Hollywood clearly is preparing emotionally for the moment where Netflix says we're going to change how we do compensation. And if I were Ari Emanuel, yeah, I'd be grumpy about it too. But Netflix has a lot of power.
Yeah, you know, I read some of that coverage, and I don't mean to diss any particular sites that did this. There's a lot of agents get ahead of themselves with assuming stuff. What they do know, what agents are right to telegraph, and when they're talking to reporters, they telegraph this, or they see events from Netflix, and they is that. Of course, the compensation model is going to change again. By the way, the compensation model is always changing to a degree. This happened in linear. I remember many times when I was at Variety covering television, Disney at one point came in and changed the way they were going to the formula, like the basic formula, residuals and whatever stayed the same. But there are different ways in terms of how many points they would pay agencies, and so there are always tweaks to the model. And business affairs people are always coming up with new ways to maximize the money that stays with the company and goes to talent. That's just the way it is. There are ways around the margins. It's more pronounced in Netflix because Netflix, with its sort of, you know, cost plus model, which is paying for the full cost of a production of a show plus an immediate profit on the immediate back end, it needed to do that because of the way, you know, Netflix itself was also the syndication market. But we are finding, especially post the strikes, that there is a willingness to sort of like try to tie success to performance. And I think there are a lot of people in Hollywood who actually do want that to happen on the writer side and producer side. People want the ability to sort of hit pay dirt, right? To be successful, especially now that we know that so many of these shows go after one or two seasons. Mm. Like, you know, the cost plus model of just automatically getting a profit, it's nice, but it's not workable long term. You're going to start making fewer shows because it's wasted money. So I think that, sure, agents and talent have every right to be wary. The studios, the platforms, they're always going to try to screw people over. That's a tale as old as time. But if you work together, there are ways that it could be better, if it leads to more shows being made, if it leads to more big paydays. What it does mean is that we're not going to have the world where it made sense for studios to just make these shows because, for example, if you were CBS Studios and you were making shows for Netflix or another outside streamer, of course you're going to make a show because you literally couldn't lose. Whereas when CBS Studios would make a show, say for ABC or even for CBS, if the show didn't go the distance, well, they were out millions of dollars because they deficit financed, right?
Right.
I don't, you know, because in the past you had to sort of, a network would pay like 70% of the cost of production, and then the studio would hope that they would get to 100 episodes so they could sell it in syndication or internationally and make all that money back. Well, Netflix said, just come to us and you'll just be in profit from day one. Well, that doesn't make sense anymore because, you know, it just doesn't. First of all, Netflix is making its own shows, so it doesn't want to sort of deficit finance its own. It doesn't want to go into overpay for shows it makes itself, where's also the studio. And in the outside world, I think it also makes sense that you want to have an upside as well. So we'll see
what
happens.
Yes, I think that that's a huge part of this, is that as great as it's been in some ways for people to be paid up front, regardless of how the show performs, and I'm not a believer that everybody who's involved in the making of the show is motivated. Like, there's an argument that is the reason that you you reward success is to motivate the people involved in making the show to work harder. And I don't believe that. I think that there are, with few exceptions, everybody's trying their best, and that saying, oh, well, if this is a huge hit, oh, well, in that case, I'll work harder. Like, that's right. Not, it's I don't believe that. I think that that is very much a corporate mindset that doesn't.
Capitalism.
Yeah, it does not fit the what's going on with the creation of these shows. But I do think what you said is absolutely true, which is, I think there are a lot of people in Hollywood who are rankled by the fact that if you make a smash hit Netflix show or streaming show anywhere, there's no upside, right? The biggest hit on Netflix that makes Netflix huge amounts of money, there's lots of publicity and all of that, and you don't, unless you renegotiate for more seasons. Which does happen. That's Stranger Things, that absolutely happened. But there's this feeling that but that's a very rare kind of thing. But there's the idea that, you know, if there is upside, you don't get to be part of it. Or the famous, like, you know, well, Jerry Seinfeld never has to work again because his show was a hit. And there was always that, I bought the golden ticket kind of mentality in Hollywood. If you have a hit, you're made. And I think that they don't like that is gone, and it's much more transactional. And so, you know, will they be willing to trade some upfront for some upside? I think actually that they will. And so we'll see.
And what will also change and make this possible too is the fact that streamers are much more open to not having everything exclusive forever, right? Where now streaming is more mature. You know, I saw a notice yesterday that a Hulu exclusive Disney movie, that Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie, I didn't watch it, but did you hear about it?
Oscar nominated.
Was it Oscar? Okay, well, yeah.
It
did it play in theater? So maybe, but it was presented as it premiered, I think, on streaming at the same time, or basically at the same time. It's now on Tubi, barely a year. And that didn't used to happen, right? Because it was an original show. You saw that when HBO, or rather Max and Disney got rid of some shows, and so they ended up. But now you're seeing stuff syndicated. It's still on Hulu, by the way.
The future of syndication. This is what streaming syndication looks like, is it ends up
either
on another streaming service, non-exclusive, or maybe it goes to Fast, or maybe all of those things, and that's part of it.
Why not? But now, though, you're opening up revenue streams. So now, hopefully, obviously, the creators of that movie will get paid for that, but that can also be, if a show is popular enough and makes enough episodes, well, guess what? It's going to possibly be another platform. So, you know, the next, you know, Hacks maybe lives on Max and premieres, but then can be syndicated to multiple places. Well, then there's a way to compensate people for that, and that's a success metric that could work. Will it still end up with people getting less money and being screwed over? Probably yes.
Or if it's a huge success and it's tied to your brand, you pay more money to keep it as an exclusive. That's the other alternative, in which case you get more money.
Right. And you have to build in those sort of guarantees and you have shorter windows too. And it's right now Netflix keeps shows for like 7-8 seasons, or there are sometimes even 10 years they have the rights to it under these cost plus deals. Well, so maybe they are willing to say, you know what? All right, we get it for 2 years after the show ends, and then it's not exclusive. And yeah, you can sell it to someone else, and they might say, okay, we'll just take it. You know, real quick story. One Day at a Time, the reboot that Netflix did. Do you remember that show?
Oh, yeah.
You remember? Yeah, it was really good. Well, Netflix canceled it, and the final season aired on Pop, which is a CBS-owned cable network, right? And then they got cut short because of COVID, whatever. A lot of the story is there are like the final six episodes. It may even be on Netflix now, but I don't think it is actually. But they can't syndicate those episodes of One Day at a Time anywhere else because Netflix refuses to let go of them. So you can't have the final season of One Day at a Time on the same platform that has the first three seasons of One Day at a Time. Maybe they've changed since then recently, but I don't think they have. And that makes no sense. But that's why, because Netflix has those for 10 years, and they're not going to let it go until the 10-year anniversary of the premiere, which is actually coming up pretty soon in a year or two, believe it or not. And that's sad, because in the old days, we'd be like, oh, this show doesn't work. NBC's not going to keep.
Yeah.
Exactly. But they can't, and because they're petty. And because why? Netflix paid for it. They paid. The creators got paid for that didn't really, quote unquote, succeed, as great as it was. So a different kind of model might allow more flexibility. And maybe once those episodes went to, say, Pluto or Tubi, maybe they go to Tubi and Tubi decides to air them, and guess what? It becomes a huge hit on Tubi. Remember when, you know, movies would go to the video store and become huge hits, or they'd air on cable, and suddenly everyone would watch them and they weren't in theaters? Well, that could happen again in streaming.
Yeah, it's true. I was thinking of Ted Lasso and how I believe, is that a WBD
Warner Brothers
show? Warner Brothers. So I'm sure that they'd love Ted Lasso to go to Max, right? I'm sure they would love that. And Apple, but that's one of those things, like that's a foundational Apple TV Plus show. So Apple, whatever their license is, I'm sure Apple will pay a lot of money for it to remain on Apple TV Plus, because
as we talk, they're negotiating to do a fourth season.
Exactly, right. I mean, and that ends up being part of it too. Is like, how much money can we pay Jason Sudeikis, but also can we extend our exclusive on streaming as a part of that? And like, it feels like a lot of this is in a lot of what we talk about here is in the same vein, which is during the gold rush, which was that transition period between traditional kind of cable and broadcast to where we're headed in a streaming world. A lot of things got very weird, but those were not new normals. They were weird temporary things, and we're going to emerge from that cloud back into a scenario where things kind of make sense again. They won't be same rules, but the rules will be, right, like they'll be similar. There will be an afterlife for shows, and that shows that have a surprise afterlife will be, the people who made them will get compensated in the end for the fact that it became a huge hit later on in life. And that I think we will end up there, but you know, there's a decade of confusion in the middle.
Right. And we are seeing that, by the way. I wanted to point out that we're already sort of seeing that too with some cable stuff too. AMC Networks, right, has made a deal with Netflix to syndicate some of its shows. And we're seeing shows that AMC did full seasons of that are becoming huge hits for Netflix that did nothing. Or the Interview with a Vampire, huge buzz. And they're still got a season coming up. And why? It's platform. AMC, because AMC doesn't have the same sort of model. They've got a cable model, and they're finding it. You know what? And it could work. And it's just about finding ways to sort of tear down those walls like Mr. Gorbachev did.
Sure, exactly. All right. I wanted to at least mention that the Netflix top 10 for the first half of 2024 came out. I know you wrote about this. What you wrote about was we can't, like, all of these Netflix stats, you have to take it with a grain of salt because, like, as you pointed out, there's a miniseries that's the number one show, but that Bridgerton season 3 will ultimately get more views than it. It's just when Bridgerton was released versus when the miniseries was released. And so it's nice to have a little bit of a view into it, but don't take it too strongly because it depends on where they cut in January and June. And this always happened to me back. Back when I worked at Macworld Expo was in January every year. And every year we would have our best traffic month in January, because that's when Apple introduced the iPhone and things like that. That's how it worked back then. And for the next 11 months, I had executives say, Jason, why is your traffic down? I'm like, boy, I really, you know, it's like, because January is always number one. That's why. It's a little like that. It's all about where you draw the lines, and they're all kind of artificial. But interesting takeaways are Bridgerton is big surprise. Three of the top 11 spots are the three seasons of Bridgerton. The UK is a very strong content creator for Netflix. The four most popular TV shows on Netflix in the first half of the year were UK produced, which is very impressive.
Or indicated the fact that the strike slowed down the production of US shows. Therefore, US releases were a little bit
stunted. UK just slowed right in.
So the UK got... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not bad. They have a good good pipeline from the UK. The most popular rerun is Young Sheldon, everybody. Well, you know, Netflix is just TV, isn't it? It's just TV. Suits and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That was a show that didn't get much attention when it was a broadcast sitcom, and yet huge on Netflix. Huge. My cat is named Cheddar, for Pete's sake. I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But it's amazing.
It's not named after the of the digital cable network that's focusing on money for millennials. No,
you know, I had a friend who used to work at that channel, but no, it's named for Captain Holt's dog and Suits. So, like, again, reruns are huge on Netflix, but I think it don't get too hoity-toity about it. Like Young Sheldon, a Chuck Lorre sitcom from CBS, was the number one rerun on Netflix. Just to be clear.
Also probably has the most number of episodes of most and most recent big sitcom. But yes, the Netflix data is, I'm glad they're doing it. More transparency is always better. But it is, honestly, it's faux transparency to a large degree. And it really has become, in the same way that the top 10 lists that are on platform are essentially just another way of marketing Netflix shows and also user experience, giving people a chance. People say, oh, I want to see what's popular, right? So it becomes a machine. And do we trust the algorithm? Well, we sort of do. And is it kind of right? Yes, I trust this data. I don't think Netflix is making it up because it's publicly reported and they're a publicly traded company. I don't think they'd lie. But I also feel like it still doesn't really tell you what's successful. It certainly doesn't tell you what's successful in streaming overall in terms of money spent versus viewership. I mean, look, Netflix is the biggest platform, and it's why it never made sense. You know, before HBO got really big, you know, and The Sopranos broke out, you know, HBO was always in one third of TV homes. So you could never compare, you know, HBO content to what was on NBC or CBS, right? But HBO still had shows that, and they didn't do nearly as many viewers, but they were still huge hits. Why? Because a certain percentage of HBO homes were paying for it. And so it made sense. It was making sure people kept subscribing, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you can't compare stuff that the ratings, it's why the Nielsen reports are so messed up. You can't compare Netflix show to Peacock shows. And so what Netflix gets with its own thing is like a lot of billions and, oh my God, this is huge. And it's sort of like, well, okay. But again, if you're reporting something like Big Bang that has so many episodes, you can't compare it to a movie that only has 2 hours or that cost, $2 million to make versus one that made $100 million. So
exactly.
I'm just a skeptic.
It is interesting, but yes, nobody get too excited about it. Exactly. Cause it is also marketing, and also you can't really hold it steady, and they measure minutes and the minutes are different. And if you measure, views versus minutes, then the numbers change, and Bridgerton has more minutes than some other show. And like, it's complicated.
And what would really make sense, I said this in my item, was I really just want Netflix to, on a weekly basis, release a top 50 or a top 40, and I want them to do, top 40 U.S. specific. Yes, there's a top 10 you can see in the U.S., but they don't put minutes attached to it. I want to know how shows are performing just in the U.S. I cover the U.S. And it's, yes, as a platform, it is true that Netflix has a broad audience, and therefore they're going to get a lot of minutes, and that looks impressive. But it doesn't actually tell me I'm covering the American audience, and that should matter what shows are doing well in America. And they don't tell that sort of information. Right. And that's not too granular that it's going to ruin their trade secrets. It's something that they should do. And at the same time, Nielsen needs to rethink how they do their data as well. But that's a topic for another day.
All right. Let's talk briefly. This is, I know it's we're in a sports area now, not your favorite. You were a Dodger
fan.
Check
my email.
And then you weren't. And it's fine. We have lots of things in common. This is not it. But I just want to give people an update. We've been talking about the crumbling of the regional sports network infrastructure and how, the streaming, people cutting the cord has changed the dynamics of sports rights and all of that. And I just want to mention, we've been talking about the Diamond Sports bankruptcy. It's a bunch of regional sports networks, and they are in bankruptcy. They're trying to renegotiate. They've got deals with the NHL and the NBA for a bunch of different teams. But they and Major League Baseball have really been at odds. Big breaking story this week, which is the Diamond has said they're apparently willing to walk away from all of their deals, and there are like 12 of them, 15 of them, it's a lot, with Major League Baseball teams, except for the Atlanta Braves. Apparently they like that deal. They wanted to do a renegotiation with some of the others, right? That's not outside the realm of possibility that they will make new deals, but their existing deals, they figure, they're not going to be able to fulfill because of their bankruptcy, because of the money involved. They want to walk away. They also have some, I think it's four or five teams where they have a joint venture with a team, and that complicates matters. Although, again, they had a joint venture with the San Diego Padres and they walked away from that too. It's possible, though, that some of these renegotiations will happen. One of the interesting wrinkles there is if you renegotiate, one of the renegotiated terms could be to get the streaming rights out of there, which would allow the team or Major League Baseball, in conjunction with the team, to sell a streaming-only version of the games, which are generally barred by these contracts. It's supposed to be a cable channel exclusive. Major League Baseball very much feels like they want to be done with these guys and walk away and build a national MLB streaming package that has local games in it for everyone. They want to start building that, and it's going to be hard because the teams make a lot of money from their TV deal. 20-30% of their revenue can come from the TV deal. So for them to take a haircut on it, it was easy for MLB to just say walk away, but they may be willing to take a little bit off the top in order to continue having money roll in. So we'll watch this, and when I have Will Carroll back and Joe doesn't have to listen to it, we'll talk a little bit more about it. But go ahead.
Well, I could say one thing. To me, this all indicates that to me, what I worry about, to the extent that I do follow this or care about it, is, you know, for the longest time, I've talked about this. I think we've talked about this on the show, about sports socialism and the fact that sports fans, who are 30-40% of the cable audience, were able to pay a lot less than they would have to normally if they just paid just for their sports teams. So as we see the coming launch of a direct-to-consumer ESPN, we'll see if Vudu ever happens, or Venue, or whatever
Venue,
that's called.
Yes.
Venue, not Vudu. That's
never going to happen.
Service. Never going to happen. But you know, as it gets away, and you know, you've all got some of these deals where like NBC is going into Hawk to give the NBA a huge amount of money. Mm-hmm. But like at some point, when people have to pay the full freight of sports, I wonder, are sports people, fans going to do it? Or are these teams going to have to finally, and players all going to have to wake up one day and say, oh, the gravy train is over.
Yeah.
And just we're seeing with Hollywood, where the cost plus deals going away, mm-hmm. and content creators who suddenly got paid to make failures and it didn't matter and there was a good payday. Well, the same thing happened with sports teams, and suddenly there's just not going to be that money because we're not all paying for everyone's teams. You know, I mean, Major League Soccer, right? Like if you want to get all the games, you got to pay Apple and you have to pay like a certain amount. Or NFL, I guess, has Sunday Ticket, which is hundreds of dollars. I don't know what the difference is between that and what's on ESPN, but like, you know, it could be a lot more expensive, and that's, you know, when that happens, isn't that going to be the apocalypse, Jason?
Yeah, it's going to have certain distortions on the revenue of various teams. I think in some ways positive, but in a lot of ways negative, and how they all deal with this is going to be very interesting. I feel like some of the NBA teams are further along here, where you're starting to see these deals where the I think Portland Trailblazers just did this too, where it's going to be on broadcast in the local markets, as well as offering a streaming version. So basically, the change that's, I think, good for a lot of fans is going to be that you don't have to be part of the cable bundle to see your team. And I think that will be huge. But how will the revenue, because a lot of the revenue that was coming in for those teams was money being overspent by cable providers to keep people on cable. And once that's out of the bag, well, then there's no motivation to spend quite as much money. So I agree. I think we have not necessarily seen peak sports rights, because I think there's a lot of national sports rights out there that are still going up. But I think we're close, and I think that there's going to be a reckoning when that happens. But it may be a while, and this is a little last tidbit I have for this section, which is, if you think this is all going to get resolved soon, I will mention that a lot of the rich teams have rich deals that last a long time and that make them a lot of money, and that they're not going anywhere. And the best example of that is that Spectrum is paying the Dodgers $8.35 billion over 25 Amazing. Years. Their contract goes until 2039. That's right. 15 more years of that 25-year deal, where the Dodgers are going to get hundreds of millions of dollars from Spectrum every single year. It is extremely unlikely that Spectrum is going to file for bankruptcy and walk away from their deal with the Dodgers. So that's an example where the Dodgers and the Yankees and some of these other teams that are doing great, they're not going to be willing to put their rights into a little bowl with everything else that MLB is building, because they're making too much money. And if you talk about sports socialism, I'll say the other part of it, which is like in the NFL, all the teams pool their rights and they get the same amount of money out of it. In Major League Baseball, that does not happen. And so it's enabled the Dodgers. The Dodgers have a huge payroll, right? But they also get $400 million from Spectrum every year on top of everything else that they're getting, and it makes it a lot easier to pay money for Shohei Ohtani. So that's going to continue until 2039. I'm just saying, Shohei Ohtani Amazing. Might not be playing in 2039, but the Dodgers are going to get a lot of money from Spectrum, and that's going to keep happening. So anyway, it's the story that just keeps on giving. So I'll check in with more Sports Corner Diamond Sports updates in the future. But we've reached the end of our hour here for Downstream. So we would love you to send in comments and questions, downstreamfeedback.com. Love to your mothers. And if you haven't yet, please consider subscribing to Downstream Plus. Everybody's got to have a plus. This was a full-size episode for everybody, but we alternate sort of every other episode. Subscribers get to hear a full episode, and non-subscribers get a mini version of that episode, and that'll be the next episode. So go to downstream.plus to subscribe and support us. Joe, thank you so much for being back. It's a pleasure as always. And now I know to properly pronounce your name as Adalian, the Adalian Stallion Medallion. I got it now. I got it. Thank you so much. Buffering is the newsletter, and you can get there from going to Vulture. Anything else you want to plug while you're here?
Or you can just Google Joe Adalian, Joseph Adalian Buffering. It'll come up. No, nothing else to plug except I love doing this podcast, and I'm looking forward to it. It's a lot of fun.
It's fun. Jason. We should start our own game show and put it on a streaming service. We could do the Hollywood Squares.
Who wants to be a streaming
analyst?
How about streaming squares? And it's just like pundits and other people like, hey, you know, I'll take Peter Kafka to block, please. You know,
oh,
maybe
I love
Peter
it.
Kafka could host.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, exactly. Very interesting. That's interesting. Also, old TV trivia, right? Where it's like, I'll take Quincy for $200, that sort
oh,
of
my
thing.
God.
Do
just
some of that. Exhume the body. What is exhume just, the body?
What I really want, my real dream job, when, you know, I don't even want to talk about journalism going away, but if it ever does, like, what I've always wanted is, like, I just want to go into one of these, it kills me, some of these streaming platforms, especially Pluto and Tubi, they've got this vast library of content. It's like, I really want to go in and program some of these fast
curate
channels.
Curate it a little bit.
Like, how about, because, you know, these fast channels are good, but they're most of them are single show channels where it's like four or five shows that like just repeat eight. Like the binge is great, but you know what? If I want to binge, I can just binge. I want curation.
Yeah,
Tubi,
Pluto, downstreamfeedback.com. Get in touch. We're here. We got some people who could really do some guest curation for you. Bring it on. That would be an amazing job, by the way. That would be amazing.
And people would watch it. Yep, I would watch so much more Pluto Tubi if I knew that it was just like cable. And by the way, with fewer commercials and you don't have to spend a lot of money. Yeah. It
would be great.
We'll see.
You can find me at sixcolors.com, and I appear on many other podcasts, including Upgrade here at Relay, and many over at theincomparable.com, including the Incomparable Game Show, which I got to say, if you like game shows, that podcast is hilarious. Theincomparable.com/game show. Check that out. How about that? That is not a promo I expected to do in this episode, but we got there. All right. Thank you again for listening to Downstream. And until next time, Joe, thanks for being here once again.
Thank you, sir. Survey says good answers.
Ding!